We're going to read from the Gospel of Luke and the 8th chapter and verse 41. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house. For he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. But as he went, the multitudes thronged him. Now a woman, having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came from behind and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her flow of blood stopped. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, "Master, the multitudes and throng press you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus said, "Somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me." Now when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling, and falling down before him, she declared to him, in the presence of all the people, the reason she had touched him, and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, "Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher." And I'll pause there. I'd like to speak about Jairus. We know he's a young father. Whether the little girl is dear to him, I think that's quite clear. She's his only daughter. There may be sons beside, or it might be implying she is his only child. She's 12 years of age. She did well in the first century to live that long. But now she's dying. And it seems that the father of the girl loves her so much that he is prepared to go to Jesus Christ and fall down at his feet. Jairus is not just anybody, he's ruler of the synagogue. That doesn't necessarily mean he's a rabbi or a Pharisee. He's certainly, I don't think, a Sadducee. But he's a man of means, he's respected in the community, and he would be in charge of discipline in the town, of making sure people lived aright. He was somebody who was looked up to, possibly who was feared. And we know that Jesus Christ, at this time, was a controversial figure who most of the religious authorities were either avoiding or actively disliking. And I imagine, like the woman who also appears, he probably have tried the doctors and they've not been able to help. And I think he's probably prayed himself, and no answer appeared to be forthcoming, apart from Jesus being in town. So if there was an issue of pride, or embarrassment, or humiliation, evidently the prospect of losing his daughter was greater. And he doesn't just come to argue with Jesus or to give him a polite request. He fell down at his feet. Here is this important man, probably a wealthy man, a respected man, who will do anything for his daughter's life. We're told he begged him to come to his house. And time is short. And so in verse 42, they set off. We don't know where this conversation really takes place in relation to his home. Towns back then were not generally large, but when you've got somebody who is about to die, every second surely counts. And then from verse 43 until 48, we have this very interesting little interlude, the woman with the flow of blood. And of course, that is a sermon in its own regard, but we're looking at it tonight from Jairus' perspective. He is not mentioned from verses 43 to 48, but he's clearly going to be there. We know he's there. He wasn't looking at his watch because they hadn't been invented. But metaphorically, he was looking at his watch. And he's thinking, my daughter is about to die. Every second will count. And here is this woman, and you know what, she can get healed at any time. To Jairus' credit, he doesn't push her away and say, my daughter's more important. And there's no record of him trying to get Jesus to move away. I imagine he's standing there, perhaps politely, respectfully, and yet he's full of inner turmoil. The one person he loves perhaps more than anyone, maybe more than his wife, maybe as much as his wife, I don't know. Her life is ebbing away. And Jesus is dilly-dallying with this woman, wanting to find out who touched him. And, you know, does it really matter? Peter hits the nail on the head, Jairus must be thinking. So what? Come on, please, please. My daughter is dying. And the woman gets healed, which is great news for her. But then, while he was still speaking, someone came from his house. Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher. Too late. He had his chance. If only he'd set off sooner. If only he'd come the day before. Jesus had been ministering for some time and Jairus was perhaps sceptical. If only he'd believed and begged a little bit sooner. Oh, it's all his fault. I could have saved her life, but you know, I didn't and I failed. I was meant to protect her. I was meant to be her guardian. But I left it too late, and then the woman appeared and Jesus wanted to find out who touched him. That last kind of clause, do not trouble the teacher. There might be a hint of irony or sarcasm there. If Jairus is that part of the community which would have known the Pharisees, which I think he was, effectively they're saying to him, you have wasted your time. We told you not to go. This man is a trouble causer. He allegedly does miracles, but when we need one, he's not available. Don't trouble him anymore. Come and grieve. Come and mourn. You need to bury your daughter now. Don't worry about Jesus. He'll look after himself. And yet we read on from verse 50. But when Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, do not be afraid. Only believe, and she will be made well. In one respect, that is a ludicrous thing to say. If she were dying, one might believe, and she could be made well. She's dead. And Jairus must be thinking, has someone mistaken her for being dead? Has she simply passed out? Is she fading away and the pulse is so faint? Is that what Jesus is really saying? And yet he says, do not be afraid. The evidence before Jairus is, you need to be afraid. You've lost your daughter. Jesus says, keep on believing. Even when the evidence tells you not to. Do not be afraid, even when your worst fear has just been confirmed by somebody in your own household, whom you know, whom you trust. You know their judgment. They can tell the difference between a dead girl and a living one. And yet Jesus says, you focus on me. Keep believing what you believe about me. And don't let the messenger of doom and gloom let you think otherwise. When he came into the house, he permitted, Jesus, no one to go in except Peter, James and John and the father and mother of the girl. All the others are sent out, the mourners, the relatives, the medical staff who are packing up their things. Just three close disciples and the parents are permitted. Now all wept and mourned for her. And he said, do not weep. She is not dead, but sleeping. and they ridiculed him, knowing that she was dead. Notice Luke has put that phrase in there. He anticipates that 1800 years later, some clever theologian, some university scholar will say, well, she was just asleep. I'm sure she passed out and Jesus revived her by touching her or shaking her. No, Luke says she was dead. They were mourning her because they were dead. Folk who lived back then were far more familiar with death than we are. And yet he says to them, do not weep. She is not dead, but sleeping. Often in scripture, sleep is used as a picture of death. Paul tells the Corinthians, because of their behaviour around communion, that's why some of you have fallen asleep. That their bodies in death have gone over and they've laid down, and their consciousness has gone somewhere else. So in one respect, having died, she was sleeping, and the day would come, a day of resurrection, when she would wake up and arise. And yet really, he's encouraging Jairus to keep on believing. If she were asleep, she can be woken. So you've got those who ridicule outside. You've got a father and a mother who are about to be grieving, if they're not grieving already, and the disciples and Jesus himself. Verse 54, but he put them all outside, took her by the hand and called, saying, little girl, arise. And her spirit returned. Her spirit had departed this physical world. And he commanded that unity of body and spirit, which we call this life, to be resumed. He has power over death. He can speak to the dead as much as to the living. He has authority over both. And she arose immediately. Not only is she alive, but she's been healed. At the beginning of the scene, she's there on a sickbed and she dies. Now she's able to get up. And he commanded that she be given something to eat. She has, her body has been weakened by this whole experience and she needs nourishment. He might also be commanding that she be given something to eat because those in the room are so surprised. In other words, he's saying, come on, it is business as usual. If somebody has been ill and they've just got up, feed them. She's alive, she's well. She's going to resume her role as your daughter, and you now must resume your roles as her parents. And her parents were astonished. And yet they believed. Jairus believed that Jesus could heal her. Jairus does not contradict the Lord when he says she's sleeping. And he doesn't take the advice given to him in verse 49, do not trouble the teacher anymore. So he believed, and yet he's astonished. What said another parent in the New Testament? Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Do these fathers not speak on behalf of all of us? We believe. Oh, but Lord, help us and rescue us from unbelief. So what does Jairus teach us tonight? Humble yourself before the Lord and come before him. And that which grieves you, that which troubles you, bring to him. Now, if it means begging and prostrating, do it. I think the more important lesson, though, is be patient. Long suffering is not a lesson or a trait any of us really want to perfect. And yet it's something, it would seem, the Lord values rather highly. We're all mature Christians in here. We know what it's like to pray. God does not operate according to our timetable. And why would he? He for whom a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years a day. Jesus was delayed. And it looked from Jairus' point of view to begin with that that cost him his daughter's health. His, her life, in fact. And yet by the time Jesus had finished, she was brought back to life and healed, and a meal was made ready for her. The Lord may have delayed, but he knew what he was doing. Jairus may have been frustrated. But when you put your trust in Jesus Christ, you're never left disappointed. So let's come to him in prayer. Let's trust him in prayer. Let's be patient.